He's a youth who posted a video of this song on YouTube.
I'm a young black man doing all that I can to stand. Oh, but when I look around and I see what's being done to my kind every day, I'm being hunted as prey. My people don't want no trouble. We've had enough jungle. I just wanna live. God protect me. I just wanna live. I just wanna live.
Today on Wings, women in Asia and Africa save lives during the pandemic.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The COVID-19 epidemic is keeping women very busy all over the world. In this program, you'll meet a doctor, a nurse, a researcher, and two journalists from Cameroon who are impacting the problem, each in her own way. But first, Nilanjana Bhoumik from New Delhi introduces India's barefoot health workers, all of them women, who carry both food and information as they make their rounds.
A few weeks back, the doorbell rang. Doorbells do not ring these days. Delivery people drop off packages in the lobbies. I open the door carefully. I find a woman in a green and red salwar kameez, a mask on her face, and a register in her hand waiting outside. She looked impatient. She fired a volley of questions at me. How many family members were there? Was there a domestic help? Was anyone unwell? I replied to her and asked her if she was screening for COVID-19. Vijay Lakshmi Sharma, that was her name. She nodded. We shared a brief chat because she was impatient to get going. She had the entire tower to cover, which would be around 200 more flats. A couple of hours later, I watched her from my balcony. She was sitting in the park with five other women. They were drinking water and fanning themselves in the parching heat of April. Vijayalakshmi is a voluntary part-time health activist known as an Anganwari worker. Anganwaris are rural health centers established by the Indian government in 1975 to address malnutrition among women and children. There are around 2 million Anganwari workers in our country. When the COVID crisis broke, they were enlisted for door-to-door distribution of dry ration, awareness campaigns, and screening. Along with them, the government had also pulled in the services of around 1 million accredited social health activists known as the ASHAs to track returning migrants, contact tracing, reporting, or accompanying suspected COVID cases to nearby medical centers. The Anganwari workers and ASHAs make up for 3.5 million of India's frontline health workers, although you're unlikely to hear about their contribution much. These barefoot health workers are chosen from among their communities, mostly villages, and receive a few weeks training to work with women and children. They teach women about nutrition, encourage them to give birth in hospitals instead of in their homes. They advise on family planning, etc., etc. The Anganwari workers are also responsible for providing pre-formal school education to children under the Integrated Child Development Service Scheme, or ICDS, the world's largest community-based outreach program launched in 1975. These women also administer anti-malarial, anti-tubercular drugs under the country's National Rural Health Mission that was launched in 2010 to provide accessible, affordable, and quality healthcare to rural India. They connect some of India's most vulnerable communities to the public healthcare system, which is why they're an invaluable network for the Indian government for conducting awareness campaigns and door-to-door screening, especially important now as migrant workers return to their local communities from the cities.
वहाँ जाके देखते हैं कि पोस्टर चक्का है कि नहीं आता है, उनका तीन तीन दिन पे जा रही है कि नहीं जा रही है, हाल चाल उनकी हालत क्या है, सुधर रही है कि बिगड़ रही है.
This army of semi-literate women are burdened with an inordinate amount of healthcare interventions. And what are their incentives? Not much. They make a maximum of 5,000 rupees a month. They are now an important part of India's strategy to flatten the curve of the coronavirus, but the Anganwari workers are paid nothing extra for this additional task, while ashas are being paid around rupees 1,000 extra for their COVID duties. What is more important is that they were given sparse online training before they were pushed to the front line of this deadly disease. And what is worse is that they're not provided with any protective gear. Vijayalakshmi, who covers villages as well as apartment complexes, says the kind of protective gear they get depends on where they are going. In some buildings, she tells me, they won't allow us without mask or gloves or shoe covers, so we get it. Places where these are not needed, we don't get anything. In the villages especially, it is very difficult, she says, because as soon as they go in to talk to them, people begin to crowd around them. They also have a tough time convincing their communities of the risk of the disease. I manage only after 3-4 visits, most often by speaking in their rural dialects. Kanchan Pandey, an ASHA worker in Azamgarh in Uttar Pradesh, told me. Pandey has been an ASHA activist for almost 15 years now. Today, she supervises a team of 18 ASHAs who cover around 24,000 people. Every day in the morning, she leaves her home and goes into the communities to raise awareness about the disease. She got a cloth mask from the government, which she washes and reuses. The WHO Director General has recently said that when health workers are at risk, we are all at risk. The problem is that despite all they do and despite the important interface they provide between the public healthcare system and local communities, so important right now, these women are not really recognized as health workers. And now, just imagine how we would have managed without the network of these women. Pathetically, right? Women have always come to the front in any crisis in this country, but their contributions remain uncelebrated, forgotten when the crisis is no longer a crisis. Also imagine a male workforce of over 3 million people working under such conditions silently. Would they have been treated this badly?
Nilanjana Bhoumik produces a weekly podcast titled Women Interrupted, available on SoundCloud and Spotify. She lives in New Delhi, India. Next, you'll hear Patience Wingo, a reporter and television news anchor in Cameroon, Central Africa.
At the onset of the pandemic, the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres challenged governments in a message to put women and girls at the center of efforts to recover from COVID-19. In Cameroon, women in the medical field and in the media are among those who are contributing in the resilience and recovery processes of the coronavirus. In almost all the makeshift quarantine centers and government-owned hospitals, as well as some private health institutions, the input comes from as many women as the men. At the Yaoundé Central Hospital, for example, where a majority of patients are undergoing treatment, most female nurses and doctors have virtually abandoned their homes to attend to patients 24/7. As a matter of fact, the first child born to a teenage mother infected with coronavirus in Cameroon was delivered by a female doctor on the 5th of April, 2020. Dr. Yanu talked about the success of the operation to CNN's freelance reporter in Cameroon, Daniel Ekonde. Take a listen.
It was a normal delivery. She was in the isolation room 48 hours before. The nurse of that unit called for us, and the patient was in active labor. So we just called for the maternity room to bring us all the materials for delivering. And the lady was wearing a mask to protect us. And when we separated the baby, she could not take her baby. And the baby was transported to the neonatal unit.
How is the baby faring?
She's doing fine. She's a girl.
Okay.
And it was a premature delivery. And we did another nursing for the baby.
Okay.
And she's fine. So the mother, she's still in isolation. And we are trying to collect her birthmark for the baby.
A landmark achievement for you. How would you really describe your work?
I'm a young gynecologist, so it was a particular event for me. It was the first time for me to enter in an isolation room.
Can you gauge the age of the woman? How old is she?
If
you
She's can... 19.
19?
Yeah, and it was her first pregnancy.
All right, thank you very much, doctor.
Dr. Yana Ungaha is a gynecologist at the Central Hospital of Yaoundé, Cameroon.
At the Daniel Muna Memorial Clinic in Douala, Cameroon, COVID-19 patients are also catered for. Lucy Elangu is a nurse there, and her experience has ended up exposing her to stigma. Some people regard anyone that has come in contact with a COVID-19 patient as someone awaiting a death sentence.
At the onset of this outbreak, it was very challenging because I had my own personal fears. I thought of my husband, I thought of my family back at home. For my daily routine as the nurse coordinator, I had to try to keep away all other staff members who had other diseases or comorbidities, as we call them, like the asthmatic on steroids or the diabetic, while putting the others in front to be the ones to take care of the patient. You could see that even the other colleagues were so scared. So there were days before they began work, I had to stop and pray, ask some of them to pray, just so that it calms people down and then gives us some form of a booster to begin the shift. I had to provide the team members with their protective material on a daily basis. I had to also ensure they were wearing everything correctly. Then also make sure that the patients were receiving the right treatment according to the protocols of the hospital and receiving the right nursing care, though in pain or in discomfort. While doing our job, there are moments you really cannot take off your mind. You know, having these COVID patients hospitalized and isolated away from the physical presence of their family members, there are days when some of them really break down, crying in tears. And you do not only become their nurse, you act as their psychologist, you act as their friend, you act as their family members. You try to alleviate their own fears. You try to reassure them. And I think this is the most satisfying part of our job. There's a feminine touch to all of these things. We all have the inborn caring spirit in us as women. That's one thing we use in this challenge called COVID. One particular incident I can never forget is when we lost a patient and the husband had not seen her all through the days of the illness, and he was really sad. I had to dress him up completely and get him to enter the room just so that he could say his final farewell to the wife. That's just one thing I can just never forget in my whole life.
Lucy Elango is a nurse supervisor at the Daniel Muna Memorial Clinic in Douala, Cameroon. Again, here is Wing's reporter, Patience Wingo.
In Cameroon, where the recovery rate stands at about 60% with a death toll of about 4%, the treatment is mostly done with the aid of chloroquine. The local production of the medication is in the hands of the Ministry of Scientific Research and Innovation. The government, with the aid of some researchers, is studying the pathology of the coronavirus. A prominent female figure whose contributions have been in the limelight is Professor Emeritus of Immunology and Parasitology, researcher of international repute on malaria, and queen mother of the Cameroon medical community, Professor Rose Gana Fomban Leke. She is the board chair of the Medical Research Institute in Cameroon, chair of the African Regional Certification Commission for Polio, and member of the Global Certification Commission. Professor Rose Gana Fomban Leke, you're welcome on Wings.
Thank you very much.
What are you focusing your research on in the wake of COVID-19?
there's a lot of research going on all over the world, but our own focus as an immunologist would be mainly to try to understand what's happening during this infection, after the infection. So in that area, we've written our own projects that we've sent to the scientific committee here in Cameroon, and also collaboration with other international people. And hopefully, we should be able to do that work. I mean, everybody has to do something in research for COVID. What's most important right now is treatment and vaccines. They're looking for the different drugs, and also at the level of our country, to plan for clinical trials, because you know when you get these drugs or vaccines, they have to undergo preclinical trials and then clinical trials before you can get it out. I think that's the first occupation now, the drugs and the vaccines. And then the other part of it, starting to understand the sequence of the virus here in Cameroon, so we can know whether there are some mutations later on, or is it the original virus. So all those things are of interest to scientists and to us. Right now in Cameroon, there's a scientific committee that the minister put in place, and we're waiting on them, and they will give the directives as to what research is going on in those areas.
Okay. What can you say about the project on the local production of chloroquine?
The head of state has asked that the Minister of Scientific Research carry out this in one of her institutions, IMPM, where I chair the board. And so I must tell you, the project is going on. We're working on it.
Professor Leke, have you been grooming some female scientists? And if yes, in which areas?
I've been working a lot with women. We have women scientists doing a lot with COVID itself. I have so many different younger women. And remember that women in particular are doing so much for COVID. They're taking care of the family, taking care of children, taking care of the household, taking care of themselves and all their work. They're doing all of this. So women are contributing a lot. And lots of these groups of women that I have, each one is doing something in this line. You also have women going around and helping out with mitigation measures. You have the Minister of Women's Empowerment, our own group, to give some masks, you know, offer what we could for the women, risking their lives and making sure that we all can eat. So we thought about them and we went out to them.
Would you want to talk about some of your research programs?
It's not even just malaria. For COVID itself right now, there's two papers that I have participated in. One with messages that you do find virus in faces means that in our own areas, it might not be so important in developed countries. But with us, with the rains going on, that means you can have some fecal or oral contamination. And so to get it out of the gastrointestinal tract, Professor Julius Oben is a nutritionist, and we're thinking about that also should be able to help in the intestinal tract. That publication is out. Okay. And also I worked with the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. We've put out in our publication COVID-19, shining the light on Africa. So myself with the regional director for WHO Africa, with the head of CDC Africa, and others, we just had that published. Right now I'm working on other papers, you know, and having many meetings, many committee meetings, and international meetings, and national, to discuss very many components of what COVID-19 is doing.
You did talk about women being at the forefront of the fight against COVID-19. But at the level of some public places, especially restaurants and bars, we still have people dragging their feet as far as putting on face masks or actually adopting the needed hygiene measures are concerned. Any message for this category of persons?
The message out there is for people to take this seriously. You know, it seems we've thought maybe COVID-19 is not as severe, but we might really hit another peak. But now I see what the government has done. And I was going down the streets. There are policemen now and gendarmes to make sure that people are wearing the mask, because it had become something. We had just left it as if COVID was gone. So with that, I'm really hoping that people would take this really seriously, understand the gravity of this, and maybe, you know, start really putting on the mask. If not, it's being enforced, so let it be enforced and everyone wear the mask. Wearing of masks is very important. If everybody does that, I think we're doing something really good for ourselves for COVID. One other thing I'd like to mention before I finish is what is going on in social media against vaccines. There's so many anti vaccine people that are sending messages around. And we in Africa have to understand that we have about 12 infections that are preventable by vaccination. If we start condoning those messages and saying, oh, vaccines are terrible, people don't come with vaccines, it will be terrible for Cameroon, for Africa. Now, one thing is to get the right message and know that there are people out there against vaccines. And if we join them, we are going to be really hard bitten than any other place else. Africa will be. Our country will be. So it's a message for us to take vaccination. Very important. Make sure children are vaccinated. Make sure that we get the right information about vaccines. It will be done very, very well in African countries that are able to do it. And we too, we cannot maybe be taking a vaccine that hasn't been tried. So when it is tried enough in those areas, they will also bring it to us. So some trials are done. We have to understand this is what we go through before you can get a vaccine. There are always all those trials. Just said that because there's a lot going on anti-vaccines in the social media, and we should be careful and get the right information.
Thank you for that education. You have recorded so many professional successes in life. What would be your advice to young girls and women who look up to you as their role model?
Yeah, I would really say to them that, you know, hard work does pay. So they should work very hard, always strive for excellence. That has been my own way of life. And they should never give up and trust in God. God never lets us down.
Any last word to everyone as we all struggle to check the spread of COVID-19?
COVID-19, it has really turned the world upside down. And we're going to have a new world coming in. We have to pray and be able to face it and face whatever comes, but to face it together. And, you know, now whatever these mitigation measures are that the government is asking us to do, that we ourselves, that we take this right into all our communities and we take it very, very seriously. But right now, all the research is going on. Science is doing its work. Everybody doing their own work. And together, hopefully, we can beat it somehow.
Thank you for talking to Wings.
Thank you very much.
Another group of professional women braving the odds to curb the spread of the coronavirus are female journalists. A journalist working with the Cameroon Radio Television, Helen Gore, has been following up and reporting the evolution of the pandemic.
Sometimes I've been assigned to cover the daily press briefings done by the Ministry of Public Health at the Health Emergency Operations Center in Yaoundé. So that's a lot of people who come from different places. No one knows exactly what they've been exposed to. So it's one of those things that you have to be really careful about. I try as much as possible to minimize the risk I'm exposed to. So for one, I would wear a face covering. Usually these disposable surgical masks are really becoming very scarce these days, and in any case should be left for health professionals who are on the front line, in my opinion. So I would have a reusable mask with me. Also, I'm armed with my hand sanitizer. Always, I will just try and avoid touching surfaces that people have touched. For example, you'd have a door handle. You don't know how many people would have opened that door before you that day. So I would have my hand sanitizer ready so that if I open the door, I immediately sanitize after, before touching any other thing that I'm carrying on me. Usually that will be my phone. So I would do that, and I would try not to sit at the table with everyone else, because then, of course, you're closer to people than you'd be comfortable with. So I would just back myself into a wall and just keep some distance between me and the nearest person. And then when I'm done collecting the information that I needed, I will then just go over to the car, sit in there and put my story together and record it and file it in by email. In so doing, I'm trying as much as possible to limit the number of people I have to interact with before my story goes on air. Now, sometimes that's not always possible, and I have to come back to base, get into a recording studio, or maybe use one of the computers to edit all the work that I have to do. I mean, then there's nothing you can do. You have to sit where someone else has sat. You have to touch things that other people have touched. So I would try to minimize the risk by using alcohol to just wipe down surfaces that I think people have touched before me. I know this sounds a little bit compulsive, like you have OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, but yeah, it's some of the things that I would do to just make myself think that I am trying to keep safe in times that are really quite frightful. So I would use the alcohol and wipe down the chair I'm sitting on, wipe down the mouse I'm going to use, wipe down the keyboard, perhaps the table as well, and then I would work constantly sanitizing my hands from time to time. It's exhausting at some point to keep doing this over and over again, but again, they say prevention is better than cure, and for now all what we have is, you know, the preventive measures while waiting for a vaccine, which we hope would come soon, because in my opinion, I think that would be one of the best ways to just have life go back to pre-COVID-19, if that's even possible at this point. But yeah, so we're stuck in this world where we have to stay away from people, we have to be watchful.
Helen Gore is a journalist working with the Cameroon Radio Television.
The CRTV, which is a major media outlet in Cameroon and for which I work, has altered her program schedule. So for me, who has a weekly magazine program pertaining to women, the shift of broadcast is now being used to edify the public to arrest the further spread of COVID-19 in Cameroon.
Female journalist Chonko Becky Bisong, who runs a radio talk show on national radio, provides life-saving content for her listeners.
I still have the weekly beat, Gender Issues on Daybreak, on the CRTV, which is a 10-minute slot, and I am able to bring to my audiences useful information about the day-to-day evolution of the coronavirus pandemic, on how this is affecting women, and also showcasing women's efforts. In this regard, we have been able to produce a handful of programs in line with the upsurge of some forms of gender-based violence due to the partial lockdowns in Cameroon or confinement in a patriarchal society like Cameroon, where sociocultural norms favor such forms of gender-based violence like early or forced marriages, female genital mutilation, domestic violence, particularly incest and rape, and wife battering. We have noticed that these have witnessed an increase, and we have been sensitizing women and talk with stakeholders like the Ministry of Women's Empowerment and the Family and UN Women to make operational the One Upon a Time open telephone line where women and girls used to call, and that they can also call for rescue when they're trapped in a dangerous situation during these uncertain times. We have also been able to produce content to showcase how low-income women, those working in the informal sector like market women, others who are hawkers of food, how they are effectively appropriating preventive and hygiene safety measures to ensure that they don't go on a complete lockdown and that they and their families remain safe. We do not forget programs to showcase seamstresses who now locally produce affordable and reusable face masks from cotton material. We have also taken advantage of the International Day of the Family as well as Menstrual Hygiene Month to produce relevant content advocating for sexual and reproductive health education to be taken up in families, so that during this time when family members spend more time together but also spend more time on the internet, children, young girls especially, will not learn from doubtful sources. We are hoping that mothers, fathers, as well as guardians can unveil the taboo that surrounds menstrual hygiene and be able to discuss this openly with their girls, especially during this time, to avoid that girls should be trapped with unwanted pregnancies or get involved in unsafe sex.
Becky Bisong is the gender and women's rights advocate at Cameroon Radio and Television. Patience Wingo reported for Wings from Cameroon. To hear Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Thanks to your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Today, on June 9th, George Floyd will be laid to rest. Although he is gone, his spirit and quest for justice live on. Today, KBOO Radio